Good morning, everybody. It is August 7th, 2026. Once again, you probably won't see this until the afternoon. But it's morning now, so I'm just going to stick with good morning. The first thing I want to do is acknowledge a user comment. Mr. Michaels says, hey there, any idea what the hell is going on with the Conservative Party? Kind of miss some of your domestic in-depth looks. Larry Brock leaving, something seems rotten in the state of the CPC. Appreciate you and your recent geopolitical coverage. I'm going to address the CPC directly today, sir, with you in mind and with the people in the audience in mind who miss me talking about Canada. I got to admit, I don't talk about it much because I feel like we are tethered to global events, and that's going to have a far greater effect on where we're going. It's also what I would describe as a great big black morass. It's been that way my entire life. Canada, all the glimmers of hope that I saw in our politics over the last few years seem to have winked out one by one. But we'll get into that next. First, I just want to talk about the absolute wreckage that is the Zionist movement in the United States. And I'm just going to show you what Zionists have to say right now. Now, for those of you who don't know, this is Alan Dershowitz, definitely a Zionist. This is a frequenter of Epstein Island, was definitely part of that circle that has now been covered up and remains covered up. But for the sake of balance, I've bought a couple of his books over time. They adorn my shelf, and I've read them cover to cover to at least understand. If it's not his mind, it is his public relations front that he puts out to the world. Whatever it is, I've studied this man. But I really need you to listen to what he highlights as the principal problem right now. Get this, Indy.
I have to tell you that the real problem are Jews. Jews in the Upper West Side, Jews in the Upper East Side, Jews in Park Slope, the Jews who voted for Mamdani. Remember, 7,000 Jews voted for Adolf Hitler in 1932. Most of them ended up in the gas chambers. And these idiot Jews, they have no idea what they're doing. And, you know, people say Jews are smart. Yeah, they're smart Jews. Some of the dumbest people I've ever met are Jews from Park Slope and Upper East Side and Upper West Side who don't understand where their own interests lie. Im ein ani li mi li, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? Yeah.
Those pesky, anti-Semitic, stupid Jews who just don't know where their own interest lies. That's Alan Dershowitz. Now, if anybody else said that, it'd probably be a problem. This is all arising from the fact that Trump essentially threw MAGA under the bus to pursue Israeli foreign policy. And we are still, hopefully, extricating ourselves from that. And I say ourselves because we're all in this together. Hopefully, Trump has reached his limit. And even though the Iranians are taunting him, and even though they're going to have control of the strait, even though they're going to charge service fees, and even though U.S. vessels and Israeli vessels will be banned, it is a public humiliation for the president, all because Sheldon Adelson gave him hundreds of millions of dollars, and he had to pursue Israeli foreign policy. I mean, Israel should be able to suffer this, because they're already conquering territory in Lebanon. They have leveled Gaza. They're about to take that over. They have entered into Syria and are doing well there. And flying under the radar is the atrocity that's happening in the West Bank. You know, they just signed an order. The Israeli government just signed an order to clear 300,000 acres of farmland. What has the West Bank done to Israel lately? Where are the rockets coming from? Largely Gaza, largely Lebanon. Well, the West Bank has been peaceful. They've burned down villages there. Like, I can't understand why people are a little bit upset with Israeli foreign policy, including the stupid Jews that Alan Dershowitz highlights that just don't vote the way they're supposed to. Now, this isn't a defense of Mamdani. This isn't a defense of the big government socialism, which will only further decay the decline. Like, the answer to corporatocracy is not full socialism. The two things lead to the same destination. What you need is a restoration of true capitalism in that free markets reign. That's my belief anyway. The corporatocracy needs to go, but that's the elite in the United States. But I want you to keep this theme of Jewish anti-Semitism, that is anti-Semitism by Jews. Keep it in mind as we listen to expert foreign policy analyst, wonderful American Ben Shapiro.
all these people who are born into a Jewish family and their association with Judaism is that their parents once lit Shabbat candles, but they have never done so, and they eat not kosher, and they don't keep Shabbat, and they don't do anything Jewish at all, except occasionally say, as a Jew, just to rip on other Jews, shut up, man, just shut up. Like, you don't get to speak for the Jews, you don't. You have no connection at all, with anything remotely Jewish.
Now, Dershowitz saying something objectionable, it's not really surprising. I mean, look who he is. Look at his frequent flyer miles going to Epstein Island. Look at what he's done with his life. For some reason, even though Dershowitz's language seems to be more offensive, this bothers me even more. Because, as I've said multiple times on my channel, I never use the word Jewish when I talk about Israel, because the actions of the Israeli government, the actions of the IDF, what they are doing is not supported by the entire family of Jewry, of Jews themselves. So I never say Jewish. It's always people who are trying to label me as anti-Semitic. I mean, they should probably take on Dershowitz. They should probably take on Shapiro, because Shapiro here is depersoning and eliminating the validity of the opinion of millions of Jews, because in his mind, if you're not an Orthodox Jew who's also a Zionist, you're not a real Jew. So you should sit down and shut up. Now, it's an interesting thing, because there is this debate as to whether or not are Jews a distinct racial group? Are they a quasi-racial group that is hybridized, and you must not only be of the ethnic group descending in the right way, but you must also practice Orthodox Judaism to officially be a Jew? There's a saying, a very clever saying I heard was, if you put two Jews in the same room, you get three opinions. So we're not talking about a united people with one point of view. There's lots of factions within the Jewish community. But in effect, what Ben is saying and what Dershowitz is saying is that if you don't espouse a particular opinion and you don't observe Judaism in a particular way and you don't do the Zionist thing, you're not a real Jew and you shouldn't have that opinion. That's pretty anti-Semitic, isn't it? And they would say that the Jews they're criticizing are anti-Semites themselves. So Jewish anti-Semites. It seems we got a whole bunch of anti-Semitism flying back and forth, accusations. But I think it's pretty clear that Frank Vaughn, much as I loathe to talk about myself in the third person, but this medium seems to qualify it somewhat, I am far less anti-Semitic than these guys are. Because to me, you can't put every Jew in the same category. And I feel that all of their opinions should be valued. There's 3 million Israeli Jews that do not agree. This is going by percentages, that do not agree with the warfare that is going on in the Middle East right now. They're outnumbered for sure, but those 3 million lives have value to me, just as every, you know, I talk about all the children that have been killed in this war, all the innocents, the women, the children. Not even fighters, mostly civilian casualties. That's pretty much what the Israeli government has been up to, just killing people. How many different documented cases of young children with bullet holes right through the middle of their head? You see, I can't in good conscience support that, and I also can't sit on my hands and be quiet about it because it's convenient. But at the same time, I feel the same way about Israeli children, about Jewish children. What is this nonsense? And we know where this is coming from. The tone of public opinion in the face of this ethnic cleansing operation is turning against the Israeli state. But once again, I would caution everybody to just remember the millions of Jews around the world who are themselves a victim of the foreign policy of the Ben Shapiros and the Dershowitzes and the Netanyahu government, supported by their proxies in the United States, in the Trump administration. But back to Mr. Michael, who asked me about the Conservative Party in Canada. Look, it's bad. One of the reasons I don't necessarily like to talk about it. Now, on screen is the article where Larry Brock, a very long-term and very recognizable name in Conservative Party politics, is leaving. He's resigning. He's probably not floor crossing, though that I guess is a possibility. Highly doubt it. he's going to go back into the legal profession and go make some money and get the hell out of Dodge. One of the reasons might be you want to know, like, conservative party politics. When it comes to foreign policy, all the conservative party is an extension of the liberal party at this point. The liberals support sending money and material that we cannot spare, because we can't spare a dollar for anybody else if we are borrowing $100 billion a year, fueling our deficit. I've talked a lot about the United States and their deficit. Well, Canada has a problem too. We spend too much money, and a lot of that money goes overseas. And if we just stopped, if we stopped the killing, if we stopped supporting a dictator in Ukraine who is 2 years past his scheduled election, still under martial law, still under total press control, still throwing uselessly away thousands of Ukrainian lives, because, and it's, you know, people say, well, he's got to fight, he's got to win the war. It's not about that. Zelensky knows where he's going once the war stops. His own people are going to lynch him. I know I'm digressing, but this is part of the Conservative Party problem. And I know it's RT, but it doesn't matter. It's a Socus poll. I don't know if I'm, or Socus poll. Zelensky would lose presidential election. I've talked about this before, multiple different polling companies. When the Ukrainian people are surveyed, Zelensky's approval ratings are somewhere around 30%, kind of copying Donald Trump. Anybody he faces off with in an election, he loses. And when he loses, he will be held responsible for the failure of Ukrainians' defense. You know, the Battle of the Bulge was a huge mistake for the Germans. They were going to lose the war anyway, but they probably could have prolonged the thing maybe into 46 if it wasn't for the misguided idea, the delusions that the leader was under, that he could turn the war around. The Ukrainians did the same thing. There's a large segment of the Ukrainian military that absolutely adores the NSDAP regime and everything they did in Ukraine. You want to look up the term Benderite and read what the Benderites are, and then understand how much of an influence they have on the Ukrainian government at this time. They fought their own Battle of the Bulge in the Kursk region, and that cost them precious material that they could not spare. And they're paying every single day. Yesterday was another 40 square kilometer day. People keep telling me it's weird. I get these bot content counts. I actually had a bot show up in the YouTube comments. I noticed it this morning. And he was saying, Frank Vaughn doesn't know anything about Ukraine, and then goes on to list a bunch of people he should listen to. And on that list were Larry Johnson and Daniel Davis and a bunch of other names like that. And I'm like, these guys pretty much say much the same things I do. Like, I didn't know about these. I didn't know about the existence of these content creators until 3-4 months ago when they were introduced to me by other commenters on my channel, because I've never been I don't watch a lot of content. I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of studying, but I don't watch a lot of video content. And that's changed. I don't watch a lot of it, but I certainly tune in. I watch, I listen to, I shouldn't say I watch, because I rarely watch. But I'll throw, if I'm cleaning the house or I'm doing something else, I'll throw Mario Nafal on in the background, because he has a long list of guests and they come from all political spectrums. It's pretty neat. But anyway, bots talking about Ukraine and how they're winning the war and how these strikes on Russian refineries are changing fate, but every single day they're losing territory. And the only thing that's really left to do now, because the United States has gone into the Middle East and depleted all of its advanced munitions in spite of what the president says. He's threatening people with jail. Like, I know I'm digressing. We will get back to the Conservative Party of Canada. But here it is. This is one of the articles that form the understanding of the media and what they're talking about. And I talked about this in a previous video. This is JINSA, the arsenal of procrastination. The United States must expand munitions production. And you go through here, and it's just a report. It's very analytical. It's got a lot of charts. It's got a lot of data. It's got a lot of source documentation, publicly available information and analysis. This is what Trump is calling treason. Trump blasts Washington Post compost as treasonous. The outrage comes in response to a story about the paper alleging the U.S. president is frustrated with his Pentagon chief. That's just the latest chapter. He's very upset about the idea that the United States is out of advanced munitions, even at the same time as he has admitted that the elite, which is the advanced munitions, he's created a different class, are running out and that they have lots of other stuff, but that stuff they can't use because it would involve putting their aircraft in harm's way. And if they start losing F-35s and they start losing B-2 and Stratofortress bombers and they start losing, taking heavy equipment losses, that's going to be very bad. But treasonous, threatening to put people in jail. And this is a consequence for Zelensky because the missiles that he was counting on getting for free and continuing to get for free and the debt relief he was continuing to get, which he's getting from Canada, which is where this is going, a lot of it got spent because the United States is the main producer of military hardware in the West. And they've blown their load. They've blown through all of it. And now they're a paper tiger. They still have nuclear weapons, a lot of strategic, not a lot of tactical. But at any rate, conservative party politics. When you do a point-by-point comparison, the only difference between the conservatives and the liberal party when it comes to Ukraine is they want more. They want more consistent support. They want stronger support against Russian aggression. This all started in the Harper area. Like, they're maintaining continuity between 2014 Harper and now, not surprising because Polyev was there. And the only criticism they have is that the liberals aren't moving fast enough. And then you have Iran. A Conservative Party of Canada strongly supports the endeavors of the Israeli and the American government to rein in Iran. Canada has legitimate beefs with the Iranian government. But the only point I'm highlighting is that the CPC position is more involvement. The liberals support the Americans as well. In many areas of foreign policy, tariffs are a little wishy-washy, but the Carney government is well aligned to the United States, and it's lost on the victims of the big red machine hypnosis. The conservatives just want to do more. And when it comes to economy, taxes, the cost of living, my thoughts on that are the conservatives are still somewhere around axe the tax. Take the carbon tax off of industry. That's a good thing. We don't need carbon taxes. We don't need net zero. By the way, you know, talking about net zero, I was reading this article this morning about the Trans Mountain expansion drives record oil tanker traffic in the Burrard Inlet. Lots of tankers up and down the coast of BC, just not in the interior waters where, you know, we could actually make some money. Ebby is posing like he's somehow saving the environment, but in reality, he is just hamstringing Canada for no particular reason whatsoever. But the thing that I got down to at the bottom of this, on August 1st, Alberta's pipeline proposal was given a boost when a notice published in the Canada Gazette said that Prime Minister's Mark Carney cabinet may add the proposal to Ottawa's list of projects considered to be of national interest, which would streamline federal approvals. The government said it would give notice by October 1st. Another 2 months of delay? Smith's government hopes the proposed pipeline and export terminal will be in operation by 2035. Well, we're still committed as a country to net zero by 2030. The Smith government is committed to net zero by 2050. She loves net zero. She loves all the talk of carbon sequestration and reducing carbon output. She plays the game just like Carney. They both talk this nonsense. The world is moving past it. The world is coming into a time where the only thing that's going to matter is energy. Whether the lights stay on, whether the heat stays on, whether the tankers and whether the shipping craft on the seas deliver their cargo on time. We're very close to that moment because the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve is at a 45-year low. There are stresses all over the world. That's why the Strait of Hormuz, that's why the Americans appear to be positioning to surrender total control of the strait, even if it means their own tankers are banned. What? And at the same time as all that's being considered, the Houthis, answer Allah, are getting active in Saudi Arabia. There is reason to believe that answer Allah and Iranian-aligned groups in Iraq are about to conduct a major offensive on the Saudis, targeting their oil infrastructure to try and bring down the kingdom. And the United States is in no position to defend them. That's why we now have a pact between Turkey and Pakistan and Saudi They say it's not targeted against any particular enemy. But in exchange for getting ready to drop the petrodollar, because you can bet your bottom dollar that that is coming, this new Asian tripartite, this alliance, is coming into view. This security arrangement, which wouldn't have been necessary, not at this pace anyway, not in this way, if the United States hadn't gotten a disastrous war in Iran, which the Conservative Party of Canada wants to get involved in, backs. And the only criticism they have of the Liberal government is they're not doing enough to support it. You know, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild how things are changing. But for 10 years of bombing, including American munitions, nobody's ever been able to stop the Houthis from doing what they're going to do. 350,000 men and AK-47s. They're cheap, they're mobile, they're effective, and all the advanced multi-million dollar munitions in the world won't do anything to dissuade them. They're ready to die for their cause, much like the Iranians. In the West, everybody, you know, you set a bomb off in a street. This blew my mind during the war, as the war has progressed. You had hundreds of thousands of Iranians turning out in the street in support of the government. Whether you like it or not, doesn't matter. That's what they did. And in the background, you saw bombs and missiles falling and blowing up buildings in the city. They didn't scatter. They didn't run. They turned and they faced the explosion and they said, Allah Akbar. You have to understand the difference in the mindset. You set off a bomb in a Western city, everybody's going to run. But that's not what the Iranians did. That's not what the Houthis did. So you tell me how exactly you're going to deal with that problem. This security arrangement that's coming into being, which may have happened anyway, but it could have been much more orderly. I don't think it has any power to stop the Houthis. And they're still going to be messing with the Saudis in the Red Sea. And there's still the festering wound of the Israeli war. So you can surrender, which the Americans, in my opinion, they have to do it. Trump's got to do it. He's got to surrender. And he can try and spin it as a victory. But if the Americans and the Israelis are kicked out of the Strait of Hormuz and the Iranians are in control, they have more leverage than they had at the beginning of the war. They won the war. It's a strategic disaster for the United States. And then there's all the knock-on effects. Anyway, the Conservative Party of Canada seems to support all that alongside the Liberals. There's also, you remember during the election, we had all of this talk of housing. And the CPC wanted to accelerate construction by cutting red tape and regulations, GST relief on new homes, market incentives to boost supply. The Liberals said they would build 500,000 homes a year over a decade. Ludicrous. It's not going to happen. It was never going to happen. If you want to deal with the affordability crisis, you have to kick out the TFWs. The Liberals are doing some of that. You got to kick out the international students. The Liberals are doing some of that. You have to get rid of the temporary residents in the country, and you have to reduce the permanent residencies that you're handing out. And lo and behold, the Liberals are doing that. It's not low enough. If you want people to have affordable housing, you have to create more supply, not by building it, but by freeing up the existing supply that's occupied by people that don't need to be here. And so the Liberals have temporary caps, and they've stabilized permanent residents around 380,000 a year. Still a lot more coming in than was under Stephen Harper. He was at 250. We're now at 380. It's still way too much, but they're reducing temporary residents, especially students, and they're managing and doing a capacity-based approach, which is basically cuts with different verbiage. The CPC is pretty much advocating for the exact same approach. When it comes to crime and public safety, once again, the Liberals are eating their lunch. They've done bail reform. They're saying they're going to keep violent offenders. The fact that it was the Liberal government that put laws in place that allowed revolving door justice to take root in this country, it was their soft on crime, it was their embracement of the legalized or decriminalized use of hard drugs, their needle exchange programs that filled our streets with junkies and criminals, it was them that did it. But I don't make the rules. I don't control the public mindset. And I have to acknowledge, once again, I have to acknowledge reality. And the reality is this flies right over the big red machine's victims, their heads. So now Carney's coming in with tough on crime, and everybody's celebrating it. And he's eating the Conservative Party's lunch, largely because the Conservative Party is not strong enough. Apple-eating Pierre is a memory. He's not out there making hay. He's not out there creating conflict and getting in the spotlight. He's slowly being eroded. Some people say it's on purpose. Some people say it's out of fear. I'm more in the fear camp because this is what conservatives do in this country. Things almost got interesting in 2017. I'll say that. When Bernier and Scheer faced off, and I believe Bernier was ripped off in the election, things almost got interesting. Bernie, you know what? I've never talked about this before, but you know what Max was going to do that really upset the Conservative Party power base? There's something called the Conservative Party Fund. It is managed with the benefit of the party and with the leader in mind. But the fund, the money, is managed by people like Stephen Harper. But it's managed by a separate cast of people. If you want to know the power behind the curtain, just look at the Conservative Party Fund and you'll find a piece of it. What Max was going to do was he wanted total control of the Conservative Party Fund. That's where he went wrong. That's why the election had to be ripped out from under him. I'm sure of it now. And I can see their perspective because the separation of the money from the leader is one of the things that's integral to the Conservative Party of Canada. And he was going to disrupt that. That's why he was rug pulled. Now, all the subsequent things that happened after that, and of course, my disaffection and belief that Bernier is not capable and has no will to actually win because he opposes anything resembling sense when it comes to building an actual political party, and that has been true since 2019. All of that aside, I'm not going to deny what 2017 was. But setting all that down, you've had a steady stream of weak leadership since then until Polyev came along, and it looked like things were going to be different. Except Polyev went to talking points during the election, and ever since then, he's never recovered his strength. Climate and energy is one big difference. The CPC would do a full repeal of the carbon pricing systems, reverse oil and gas emission caps, and clean electricity regulations, repeal the Impact Assessment Act, ease pipelines and projects, actively promote Canadian oil and gas. The Liberals are still on board with the net zero talk by 2050, which means all of their talk of pipelines and all their talk of energy development is it's totally at odds with their stated objectives and policies. So you want to know what's happening with the Conservative Party of Canada? It's in the toilet because of a lack of choice, a lack of optionality, a lack of strength, a lack of ability. As people say, I've heard this for a decade now, that the Conservatives cannot get overly aggressive because if they do, the media will attack them. As if that's a bad thing. As if conflict isn't what gets eyes on your cause. As if taking strong positions and defending them couldn't build a new consensus. You're not going to break through the hypnosis of those affected by the big red machine by failing to crack a few eggs. You got to shake things up. You got to get combative. You got to fight. You got to risk saying stupid things. You got to get out there and do it. And until they do it, this is what's going to happen. Now, this is Polywave. For those of you who are sick of 338 because it's run by some former NDP guy, fine. This is Polywave. And it is polywave.com. It's run by a guy who just turned 18. I'll tell you this kid, I doubt he's ever going to watch this. We follow each other on Twitter. We talk back and forth. He puts in the work. He does a lot of good work. I'm not paid by him, which, by the way, someone else again in the comments section said, I don't know who's paying you. Nobody's paying me. I got a donate link, and that donate link buys you nothing. You have no idea how many times people have tried to grease me to say something, or people who have donated before threaten me to withhold future donations if I don't change my line. And I tell them all the same thing. I can't be bought. You can't influence me that way. And in fact, you just lost all my respect. Somebody could show up at my door and offer me $1 million to make one video. And if I didn't feel comfortable with the content of that video, I wouldn't do it. I probably wouldn't do it if I did feel comfortable. I would say, look, I'll make a video. And if it happens to align with what you're thinking, I'll take your money. Because who wouldn't take the money? But like, I can't be bought. I can't be bought. I'm not monetized. I don't got ads. Like, I don't know what else I can do. And I'm sorry I go back to this point because there's only really one thing I really want from my audience, whatever size, is to understand that Whatever I put out there comes from me. It's not coming from anywhere else. It's just me saying what I say and being honest about it. At any rate, Polywave, check it out. I'm not getting paid by Polywave. I just happen to really like the guy. I like his work ethic. It's not just Canada. He's got everything. He's building out a political platform covering polling, election results for just about every major country in the world. And he works hard every single day. Dude's only 18 years old. He actually made a tweet the other day. And he said, I'm 18. I'm an adult now. And I typed out a response to basically say, you're not really an adult until you're 25 to 28. For me, it hit about 25. I probably perfected being an adult by 28. And I'm 46 now looking back. I still kind of hold to that. I came into my own by 25, 28. But before that, I was still just a young man or a kid as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, the way this kid works, though, maybe he is an adult. But here it is. Anyway, Canada federal election polls. This is the polling average. It's got the Liberals at 43 and the Conservatives at 35. There are people and influencers who are telling you that there's a tightening. There's no tightening. It's statistically negligible. We're not at election time. Carney doesn't even have to seek an election because he's so well ensconced now. People are trying to make by-election results that are close in places like BC look like some kind of sea change is coming. And these are the same people that told you Pierre Poilievre would never lose Carleton. These are the same people that told you the lead that they had during leading up to the election was insurmountable. Here we are, living in that world, and they're still trying to tell you there's a tightening. And here it is. Liaison, Nanos, Abacus, Angus. You don't have to like Nanos. I don't like Nanos. Liaison, Nanos, Liaison, Nanos, Abacus, Liaison, Nanos. Like, on down the list, Leisure. Like, look at Leisure. 48 to 34. Where's the tightening, man? There's no tightening here. And of course, there's your average. The big red machine is powerful. And unless you get a sledgehammer, a verbal sledgehammer, and you get in front of that train and you fight with it and you oppose it and you make their media write bad copy about you every single day, you are never going to break that mindset. It has to be aggressively fought. And that might mean sacrificing the next election to build the constituency, because that's what needs to happen. And people will say, well, we can't afford another election. Well, we've dropped three or four of them now. And we haven't had anything real to choose from in most of them. So what's one more? If you want to break the propaganda, if you want to break the control on the Canadian mind, the people who have the platform, if you're the leader of the opposition and you have the ability to get in front of a pulpit and call a media scrum and spend hours fighting with them, you should be doing that. And you should be having your people do it. Like, I don't know how else you break the propaganda. And until the Conservative Party of Canada wants to fight, they're going to keep losing MPs to the Liberal Party, because some of the policies the Liberals are doing are right out of the Conservative Party playbook. They're doing a very effective job eating their lunch. You have to respect it. You have to like it. You got to respect it. People like Larry Brock, they're going to read the tea leaves. They're going to get out of Dodge. And slowly but surely, under the leadership of Pierre Poilievre, who is the literal best, it's the summation of 10 years of work, is the Poilievre leadership. This is the best the Conservative Party can do. There's no one else after him. And if under him, things go soft, and if under him, the belly of the Conservative Party gets ate away and ripped away and goes to the Liberal Party and some of the other talent leaves, where else does conservative politics, where does opposition in this country go? The NDP is a basket case. Did you watch their convention? I have to be careful how I talk about it, because some of the things that I might say could stray into the illegal in a post-C9 world. A gong show. It was like they were live-action role-playing Star Trek. And they're broke. They have no assets. Jagmeet Singh made sure there is no opposition in this country from the left. He broke them completely. So all there is the Conservative Party and their organization. They still maintain 25 to 35% support. That's a big deal. But they better start doing something with it. Because if they don't, I'm sorry to say, we're going to be staring at Carney for a long time. And as I've talked about in other videos, we know what he's about. If you read his actions and not so much his words, It's all about that integration with North America. It's all about advantaging Brookfield. And there's a bunch of statistics I could go through, and maybe I'll do them in the next video. But I want to talk about how, in spite of the rhetoric, Carney's actually hollowing out and weakening Canada. Like, we're not getting stronger under his leadership. We're actually getting fundamentally weaker. And if the United States is done in the Middle East, and I'm not so sure they are, they might try and do it one more time, and then they're just going to have to leave more on the table when they inevitably leave. Anyway, they're going to come home hungry. And a weak Canada, just like Cuba, is easy pickings for the administration. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.